Mark Twain once said, to succeed in life, you need two things, ignorance and confidence. While I don't necessarily agree with Mr. Twain regarding the need for ignorance, I definitely agree that without confidence, you will have a difficult time finding success in any endeavor. So to give us a creative boost to our confidence, I asked Sam Horn to stop by to help us out. Sam is the intrigue expert, author, keynote speaker, and communication strategist who has helped coach some of the world's top entrepreneurs on how to communicate more clearly, compellingly, and convincingly. And she's here today to help us do all of that and more and do it with confidence. Sam, welcome to Success. Great to have you here.
Why, thank you, Darren. I've been looking forward to sharing some ideas with your listeners.
So, Sam, I don't want to start with just the basics here. Give us your definition of confidence.
You know, confidence can be summed up into two words. I can. Think about it. If we think I can't, if we're going for a job interview, if we're speaking at a conference, or if we're playing sports, we think we can't, we're going to be plagued with doubts. It's going to undermine our performance. If we think I can, we're going to be pumped up and we're going to be ready to go.
So let's take this further. It's obvious that everybody wants to be more confident, but let me just cut to the chase. Why are more people not more confident than they are right now?
People have a lot of reasons for why they say they're not confident. You know, they weren't taught how to be confident, or they came from a dysfunctional family, or they had a tough upbringing. Well, those are reasons, and they're fixable. In fact, I think one of the most profound insights about this topic of confidence was in a study that surveyed successful people. And one of the questions they asked is, what kind of upbringing did you have and how did it contribute or compromise your confidence? Well, what they expected, 50% of the people said they had parents who said, you can do anything you want to do, you can be anything you want to be. The other 50% was a surprise because these people came from very difficult upbringings. However, instead of using it as an excuse, they used it as incentive. So one of the good news about even if you've had a tough past, turn it into your mission for life so that you don't do to others what was done to you.
Yeah, Jim Rohn used to say, you know, a lot of people treat their past as a billy club that they keep beating themselves over the head about, and then some choose to see it as a schoolmaster that has taught them and has developed them to be extraordinary and do things that the ordinary person can't do. And one of the things I teach is that your adversity is your advantage, that these are the muscles that you've developed that allow you to do things that normal human beings can't do. It gives you those supernatural powers. So let me tackle this myth. It's questioned all the time about whether entrepreneurs are born or whether they are developed. Is it a skill that you can learn, or just are you a natural born entrepreneur or a natural born leader, or can you learn the skill? And so when it comes to confidence, I'm sure people ask, well, you're either born with this innate confidence, it seems, or you're just not. I know that you believe it to be a skill. So talk to us about that and how to develop it as a skill.
Darren, I'm just so glad you brought that up because Bob Green said, I've heard every excuse in the book except a good one. And you're right. I believe that we can learn how to be confident, to act confident, just like we can learn to play the piano, just like we can learn how to play tennis. And so here's one of my favorite ways that you can do this. It's, let me tell you a story about a woman named Kathleen Callender who poured her life savings in 2 years into being an entrepreneur and starting a business. Then she said, Sam, I just found out I have an opportunity to pitch investors at the Paley Center in New York, but I just found out I have 10 minutes. She said, you can't say anything in 10 minutes. She said, you know, I'm so intimidated by this situation, I'm not even sure I'm going to go through it. Because see, Darren, when people don't know what to do, they usually don't do anything. So I gave her a skill on how to start any presentation in 60 seconds that is going to command the respect of everyone in the room. Because see, if you know how to start a presentation in 60 seconds that commands the respect, you think I can, you walk in with confidence instead of dread. So you want to hear that 60 second opening?
Sure, let's hear it.
Good. Did you know there are 1.8 billion vaccinations given every year? Did you know half of those are given with re used needles. Did you know we are spreading and perpetuating the very diseases we're trying to prevent? Imagine if there were a painless, one-use needle for a fraction of the current cost. You don't have to imagine it. We've created it. Now she's off and running. Now, this is a replicable technique. I'm reaching out to everyone listening because we know that if you can speak confidently, you can act confidently, whether it's at the Bark Park, whether it's in front of your board of directors, whether it's in front of 1,000 people in a ballroom or a room full of investors. So hear this technique. Think about a situation where you're making a request or a recommendation. You want to win buy-in to whatever it is you're proposing or pitching. Now, what are 3 did you know questions you could ask that your audience doesn't know, that kind of go to the scope of the problem or the urgency of the issue or the size of the market? You've just earned their attention because they're smarter than they were 20 seconds ago. Now use the word imagine, because see, the word imagine pulls them out of their preoccupation because they're picturing your point. They're fully engaged because they're seeing what you're saying. Now bridge the word imagine with 3 aspects of your best case scenario. So now think back to Kathleen Callender of PharmaJet. What did her decision makers care about? Well, they cared about those painful inoculations, so it was painless. They cared about those reused needles, so it was one use. And they cared about money. All decision makers care about money, so it's a fraction of the current price. Did you see we distilled into 1 sentence a best case scenario? Now bridge into, you don't have to imagine it, we've created it, and you've just shown them this isn't pie in the sky or speculative, this is a done deal, and you're the one to deliver it. You have that kind of 60-second opening, you can walk into any situation with confidence because you know you're going to be able to command people's attention and respect.
So Sam, did you know that people are most insecure or lack confidence when they're meeting and interacting with others? I'm sure. So imagine for us how we can help people overcome this dread of networking. Tell us what we can do about it, and so that people can network and engage and meet people with greater confidence.
Hey, Darren, you're one quick study. Okay, so let's talk about networking, because you are right. A lot of people dread it, and I think it's because of these elevator speeches. I mean, do you know anyone who likes to listen to a speech? In fact, a great line from Bette Midler in the movie Beaches. She said, "Enough about me. What do you think about me?" Yeah. So from now on, let's turn those elevator speeches into elevator conversations. And here's a quick example of how we can do this. I had an opportunity to speak at Inc. 500. So in our session, we're working on everyone's elevator intros. Here's Colleen, Entrepreneur of the Year. I said, "Colleen, what do you do?" Wah, 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 wah. I mean, 2 minutes later, no one in the room had any idea what she did, and she was the CEO. And now, Darren, think of the lost opportunity cost. You had asked how lack of confidence can undermine our business. Well, no one's going to walk up and talk to her because they have no idea what she does. So here's what we did. I said, "Colleen, what do you do that we can see, we can smell, we can taste, we can touch?" She thought about it for a moment. She said, "I run the medical facilities that offer MRIs and CAT scans." I said, "Now don't tell that to people, because if you tell them, they're going to go, oh, that's the end of the conversation." We don't want to end the conversation. We want to kickstart the conversation. So turn it into a 3-part question. She said, "Why not a 1-part question?" Well, because if you said, "Have you ever had an MRI?" and someone hasn't, it's the end of the conversation again. So, "Have you, a friend or a family member, ever had an MRI or a CAT scan?" Now, put a sock in it. Stop talking. This is where the conversation comes in, because they're going to come back with RE, relevant experience. Maybe they say, "Oh yeah, my daughter hurt her knee playing soccer. She had an MRI." Now, link what you do to what they just said. Oh, well, I run the medical facilities that offer MRIs, like the one your daughter had when she hurt her knee. The eyebrows go up, the lights go on, the band plays. Now we're off to a two-way conversation instead of a one-way elevator lecture.
So agree with that. All these ideas about creating these elevator pitches where you're just puking your information on somebody that didn't ask for it. Instead, asking a question, turning it into a dialogue, making it relevant to the person who's on the other side of the conversation. Very good information. So I want to use this quote from your book, What's Holding You Back, and ask you about it. You say, if you feel your life is like a seesaw, perhaps you're depending on other people for your ups and downs. So let's use that quote to talk about how comparisons to others kill confidence. Tell us about that and what we can do about it.
Darren, I am so glad you brought this up because I really believe this is one of the biggest confidence killers. Comparison causes us to quit. And I'll give you one of my favorite examples. I think you know that I helped start and run the Maui Writers Conference for 17 years. And at that first year, I was out on the beach walking up and down, getting my intro straight because I do the emceeing. Here was a woman crying on the beach. And I went over, I said, are you okay? And you know what she said? I don't belong here. I said, you don't belong here? She said, who am I to write a book? She said, it's like you're putting yourself up on a pedestal and saying, I'm perfect, I know, and you don't. And every time I walk into a bookstore, I get depressed because I see all those other books on my topic, you know. I mean, you know, who am I to write a book? And I said, Jana, what do you want to write about? And she and her husband, Howard, had adopted a biracial child named Ari. And it was pretty challenging. And she said she'd gone to the library to try to find books on the topic. And they just made her feel worse because there were all these Pollyanna books about what a blessing it was. And she said, I want to write the book I need, I can't find. I said, Jana, you know, when we're having a confidence crisis, it's often because we're thinking, who am I? Here's the question to ask. Would someone reading my book benefit? Because if someone reading your book will benefit, not only do you have a right to write, you have a responsibility to write. Have you ever thought about it that way? Is it ideas, books in your head help no one? So I'm kind of reaching out to our listeners. Is that if they're comparing themselves to others and it's causing them to quit, if they have an idea or a project or a business or a program that will benefit others, get it out of your head and out into the world.
So we've talked about a couple of confidence-destroying factors like networking, meeting with other people, having to explain yourself or to share what you do with others, and then this idea of comparing yourself to others. Now, let's talk about another confidence-crushing experience that some people feel, and that is the number one rated fear above death itself, and that is public speaking. So how can you help those listening to do this endeavor without fear and with great confidence? What's your ideas on that?
Well, you know, Jerry Seinfeld has a great line about this. He says, you know, that speaking in public is rated the number one fear over death, which means that at a funeral, people rather be in the coffin than delivering the eulogy. Okay, so what can we do about it? Here's what we're going to do. If people want to overcome their fear of speaking once and for all, it is to get out and walk in nature to prep. I think prepping in a mirror or prepping by reading our notes is the worst advice we can possibly be given. If you get out and you walk, and by the way, Darren, when I'm out on the road speaking, if it's storming outside, I walk the halls of my hotel because I know that when I'm walking, I'm aligning right and left brain. I know when I'm walking, I have multifaceted focus. That means that I'm thinking about my message, I'm preparing my message, I'm walking, I'm noticing my surroundings. It's mimicking the real life situation. Furthermore, and perhaps most importantly, we are embodying our message. We're getting out of our head where self-consciousness lurks, and we're getting ourselves into that flow state where we are so immersed in what we are doing. We are living, breathing it. We are raring to go. I mean, I did that before this interview, Darren, as I was out walking the lake earlier today, so that I was pumped and hopefully sharing ideas that everyone could enjoy. And do we have time for one last tip on how you can be in your wheelhouse when you're speaking?
Yeah, please.
Embed this mantra. I am here to serve, not to show off. I'm here to make a difference, not to make a name. I am here to give good, not to look good. You know, when Candy Leitner's daughter was killed by a drunk driver on the way to her prom, and the first time she spoke in public, her knees were knocking and her palms were sweating, and she told her best friend who was with her backstage that she thought she was going to faint. And her friend said, "Candy, why are you speaking?" And Candy said, "It's so that if one person hears this message and the next time they're about to drive drunk, they turn over the keys." So from now on, and what she does now, every time she speaks, she repeats that mantra, "Turn over the keys." And it centers her that when we are speaking for the right reasons, we are speaking to serve. What is your mantra that will center you in adding value for your audience in speaking so you connect with them and the light goes on in their eyes and they choose to do something differently as a result of hearing what you had to say?
So let's talk about ultimate confidence. That would be being bold or audacious or really courageous. And I know that you have a belief that is you don't have to know to go. So give us an example of someone who did just that. And who is that, and how can more people sort of adopt this courageous, audacious boldness?
You know, Darren, after our interview, I hope that people go to YouTube and they put in these words, "ducks blowing in the wind," because there is a 42-second video on YouTube. It shows this mother duck and her little ducklings waddling across the plaza, and here comes this burst of wind, knocks them, over a tea kettle. And then a few seconds later, though, they brush themselves off and they're on their way. And it really caused an epiphany for me because I thought, you know, I have always been a kind of have to have my ducks in a row to go kind of person. And I think a lot of women are that way, is because, you know, I grew up before Title IX. And we had to prove that we earned our seat at the table. We had to prove that we were perfect and that we had it together and that we didn't make mistakes. And so that kind of became an extreme that's become our Achilles heel, is that if we don't have everything together, we don't go. And what I've learned, and it is exemplified by Mickey Agrawal. Mickey is a young 30-year-old woman who was an investment banker at Goldman Sachs. And she said, "Sam, when you live in New York and you're young, you don't have much money, you have a small apartment, so you go out to eat every night. Well, most of the food you eat in restaurants isn't good for you, so I ended up with stomach problems. And I thought everything I like to eat is not good for me. Well, what if it was good for me?" So she GTS, she Googled that stuff, and she went online. She discovered that pizza accounts for 10% of all food sales in New York. Well, she hadn't ever been in a restaurant where she worked before. She didn't go to culinary school, but she decided to open her own organic pizza restaurant. Well, now it's 3 years running strong. She's going to be the first restaurant in Tony Hsieh's redeveloped Las Vegas. He's pouring $350 million of his own money into it. And Mickey Agrawal and many millennials that I know are great believers in you don't have to know to go. Google that stuff, figure it out, and make it happen instead of sit around with all those reasons why you're not prepared and aren't perfect.
So let's Google you one last time. And that is the last final piece of advice. If somebody's listening going, "Okay, I know I need to have and exude and exemplify more confidence," what can somebody do today? If there's just one action step, that first step in the 1,000-mile journey that they can take today that would boost their confidence and set them in the right direction, what would be that one final piece of advice?
Well, Darren, you saved my favorite question for last, is because I think every single day we have confidence crossroads. And I came to one years ago when I still lived in Hawaii, and a friend and I went out to Waimea Bay on New Year's Day. Now, there are some pretty decent surf rolling in, and now we didn't go out to the breakers way out by the levee out there. We went to the first set of breakers, but they were pretty scary. And so we're standing there on the beach with our boogie boards watching those sets coming in. We're going, should we? Shouldn't we? Should we? Shouldn't we? 45 minutes later, we're still standing on the beach. We finally looked at each other, and it's like, let's go in. We'll never know, standing on the beach. I'm reaching out to everyone listening because there's something you want to do with your life. There's a book you want to write. There's a business you want to start. There's someone you want to ask out on a date. There's some project that would be meaningful to you, and you're standing on the beach going, should I? Shouldn't I? Should I? Shouldn't I? Soren Kierkegaard said, we always experience anxiety whenever we confront the potential of our own development. Do what makes you anxious. Don't do what makes you depressed. I'm reaching out to people, and if they want to have that core of confidence they carry with them wherever they go, when they're at a confidence crossroads, go in, don't be standing on the beach.
All right. Well, Sam, you definitely delivered on your brand. This has been intriguing. So thank you so much for sharing your great insights with us. And thanks for being with us here at Success.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope these ideas have really been interesting and useful for our listeners.
Success Audio Series. Copyright Success Media. All rights reserved.